I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Dave Perkins, an M&A and private equity partner at Cravath and co-head of the firm's private equity practice. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
So we're going to talk about your background on today's podcast, your time at West Point, and then in the U.S. Army, and your time on active duty in Afghanistan as a member of the reserves, and then how you found your way to corporate law and how you have gone about building a PE practice at Cravath. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to the law.
Sure, happy to do that. I mean, I'm from New Hampshire originally, grew up in Connecticut for the most part. And then after high school, went to West Point. And really, I didn't grow up in a family of lawyers, didn't really know what lawyers did, had no idea that the job I have today even existed, and was at West Point for 4 years, had never thought about a career in the law. When I left West Point, I was in the infantry in the Army, in the 82nd Airborne Division first, and then a few other assignments after that. But before I graduated in winter of our senior year, there was an opportunity to get out of doing a room inspection if you would go take the LSAT. So I didn't feel like cleaning my room, and taking the LSAT seemed easier. So one Saturday morning, we drove out to Marist and we all took the LSAT.
Did you do any prep work for the LSAT, or it was just you can take the LSAT or you can have a room inspection and you chose the LSAT?
I mean, I did the requisite amount of prep work that 21-year-old seniors at West Point would do on a Friday night when you don't have to clean your room. I'll just kind of leave it there. I just kind of showed up and took it cold. But I did well enough on the test, fortunately for me, that in the back of my mind anyway, I had sort of stowed away this idea that whenever my time in the Army was done, if I was looking to do something else, maybe law school would be something I could do. You do take a law class at West Point. You take this class in constitutional law for the citizen soldier. And so I'd been exposed to it, but I was an engineering major. I was mostly math and science, a very broad-based humanities and liberal arts curriculum at West Point. So you get to see a lot of different things, but I'd never thought I would ever be a lawyer. So I went off in the Army. I had this LSAT score in my back pocket. Then 5-6 years later, lo and behold, I'd been injured on a parachute jump when I was a lieutenant at Fort Bragg. It wasn't really getting better. I had back issues, leg issues, whatever. And I just made the choice that it was being in the infantry, and being an infantry officer means you have to lead from the front and you need to be able to do all the things that you expect your soldiers to do. And if you're dealing with injuries, that just becomes more challenging. So at that point, I thought about what comes next and really didn't give a lot of thought to going to law school other than I figured it would be a nice thing to do to regroup for a few years. I was stationed south of Seattle, Washington at this place called Fort Lewis. I think it's called something different now. And going to law school at the University of Washington was I could get in-state tuition. It was really cheap. And at the time, I remember thinking, even if this is a terrible decision, it really wasn't a lot of money to spend. And so I left the Army, went to law school, and really had no idea what kind of a lawyer I might want to be. You saw Law and Order episodes or whatever. You got that sense of that kind of trial room lawyering. And then I went to law school the first year, and I don't think litigation was for me. I don't think the litigation heavy focus of law school, I mean, I did fine academically, but I don't think it was really interesting to me. And then after my first summer, I also worked in a litigation kind of role for a state agency out in Washington State. And I became more convinced. I was like, I just don't think I'm a litigator. So what else do you have? And it was that fall when I started looking around to other law firms. I knew nothing about New York. I knew nothing about New York firms. I didn't even know how to pronounce Cravath's name. I don't remember how I mispronounced it when I interviewed here, but I remember being corrected and then just mental noting to myself, never say the name Cravath throughout the rest of the day. It was always the firm or your firm, this firm. But, you know, I really knew nothing. I didn't know anything about the firms in New York or what practice areas were the most sought after or any of that. I randomly had sent my resume to a few New York firms that were collecting them from students at my law school, and Cravath was one of them. They brought me back in for an interview. I still remember it was the Friday before Columbus Day weekend, just to date myself about it, because now we do all of our interviewing in the summer, and back then we used to do it in the fall. But the hiring partner sat me down at the end of the day and said, we're going to offer you a job. I was like, wow, that's great. I had no idea. To this day, I'm still a little mystified about what they saw in me. But I went back out to Seattle the next week and told the people in our career services that I interviewed at this firm called Cravath, and I'd gotten an offer on the spot, and it was crazy. And they're like, oh, you have to take it. You have to go there. What are you doing? And that was it. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I decided to go and have been at Cravath the entire time since then, with one brief exception where I went back in the Army a few years later.
So, Dave, talk a little bit about your summer associate experience at Cravath.
When I was a summer, I was assigned to work for one of our M&A partners, which is how our summer program works. It's a one-on-one mentorship program where you get assigned to individual corporate partners, and mine happened to be an M&A lawyer. And so that meant I was staffed on a variety of M&A matters that summer. And I think that was when I first realized that could have been the practice for me. It was mostly smaller private deals, not things that are on the front page of the Wall Street Journal or anything like that. But it really kind of drove home the things that I still like about M&A today, which is working in small teams, tight deadlines, always figuring out something new about the deal or about the companies involved or the businesses or the personalities. And that first and foremost, I think that you work on a deal very intently over a compressed period of time, and then you get it signed, you get it closed, and you move on to the next one. And I think that's very much the life cycle for most transactional lawyers, and in particular M&A lawyers. And I found that part of the job, that constantly exploring something new and constantly learning and growing as you go from deal to deal, I found that part to be very interesting and rewarding. And I think at that point, I was probably hooked.
So talk about your early associate years, and then you stayed in the Army Reserves and were called up to active duty in Afghanistan. So talk about that experience as well.
So that's right. I left active duty after a little over 5 years after graduating from West Point, but I stayed in the reserves. There were wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan at the time, and I just felt like if they ever needed me back, they'd call, and I felt like that was my responsibility. So I stayed in through law school and my first couple of years as a Cravath associate. When I came back full time, I was working in our capital markets practice and then in our leveraged finance practice, and this was all, call it 2005, 6, 7 timeframe, and was busy. I mean, those were busy times. You know, the credit markets were extremely busy, if not overheated, looking back at it. And really, I was diving into those two practice areas. Our rotation system, I think, is somewhat unique, but it did afford junior associates a tremendous amount of responsibility and autonomy very early on. And so I was making my way through the different rotations. Then in the fall of 2007, I got a letter saying that they had need for me to be called out of what was called the Individual Ready Reserve. There was a brigade of the New York Army National Guard that was assigned to go to Afghanistan in 2008. And they were putting together a bunch of small teams of officers and senior sergeants to be embedded advisors to the Afghan military and police. And because of my background as an infantry officer, I kind of fit the bill. And so I was called into that unit. We trained for a little while in early 2008. Out at Fort Riley, Kansas. And then I spent the rest of 2008 in Afghanistan, mostly in the southern part of the country, and had a really interesting job. I had a small team of Americans. We were in pretty remote places in the country, and we lived, worked, and partnered with our Afghan allies. They were mostly a police force, or at least that's what they were called. But in reality, there was very little difference between the local militias and our police force, other than our guys sometimes wore uniforms. But it was a very interesting experience. And one I think I'm glad I came to later, where I used a lot of the skills I had already started to develop as a young lawyer. And I think that I was much better prepared to do that job in Afghanistan after having been a Cravath lawyer for a couple of years than I would have if I had just stayed in the Army, which is kind of ironic how life works, but very true in my case.
And so then talk about coming back to Cravath and reintegrating into civilian life, but as a lawyer.
It was challenging for sure. I came back in early 2009 and the world could not have been more different, right? I left at the height of the credit bubble, the height of kind of the private equity boom of new deals being announced every Monday. And then while I'm gone, I still remember to this day walking into a British command post in Helmand Province the day that Lehman filed for bankruptcy and looking at their big screen that had Sky News on it with those iconic pictures of people coming out of the Lehman headquarters carrying all their boxes on that day. And I come back and, you know, there's a new president. The markets are completely different. there's a palpable sense of fear, I think, among the law firms and the investment banks and the other major institutions in New York about, have we righted the ship enough? Is this stable? Is this going to last?
A generalized fear, by the way. I mean, you felt that all through New York. It was really remarkable. I mean, certainly in the financial services world, people felt it. But, you know, normal people who may have been out of a job or working a second job and saw their hours cut, they felt it too.
Being away for that year, it was a really powerful feeling when you come back. I mean, my life had changed dramatically. I mean, my year in Afghanistan, I think to this day, was still one of my most formative experiences, just in terms of some of the things that happened to me over there and how, you know, I kind of grew and developed because of that. And then you come back to a city that's so completely changed. And then in short order, you know, I show back up. I mean, I need a job. I need to pay the rent. So I'm back in the seat as a fourth year Cravath associate in a M&A group. They had rotated me again. So I came back and was doing M&A and started to find my footing again. Going from the Army to law school seemed easy. Going from law school to a law firm seemed easy. But coming back from the Army to a law firm again, that was hard. That was very foreign. And it was surprising how foreign it felt in that, and getting back into the routine. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, our firm actually was very, very busy in 2009. And so I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. I immediately kind of was thrown in and was the leading associate on a number of pretty complicated deals. And, you know, you just get busy and you get over it. But it was definitely a bit of a challenge to come back and try to get my head back into the law firm associate game.
And then talking about being a senior associate, thinking about the possibility of making partner and what you thought your practice was going to look like if and when you did make partner.
I never really thought about it. I mean, I think people say that, but I legitimately never really thought about it. I came back from Afghanistan. My initial thought was, well, I need to rebuild my professional resume. I need to have some current professional experiences before I even think about what might come next. I just always assumed that I would not be a partner at Cravath. I don't know why I assumed that, but I always did. The odds are not in your favor. And so I think it's always best to assume that it's not going to work out for you. And so I think from my perspective, it was, as a senior associate, I felt like eventually I was going to leave because for whatever reason, everyone does. And until I did, I was really focused on just building as much knowledge and experience as I could get. And as soon as I felt like I plateaued and I wasn't learning, then I told myself that would be the signal. Like that would be the signal that it was time to move on and go do something else. I was in our M&A practice for a couple of years-ish, give or take. And then the managing partner of our corporate department called me in one day and told me he had to rotate me again. And he rotated me to our real estate group. And I was a little shocked by that. You know, I had no background in real estate, didn't particularly want to do it. But then what I found when I got there was that actually real estate was the last real vestige of private equity in any meaningful way at our firm. The real estate clients were all private equity firms for the most part. So they raised funds that we worked on for them. And then we did a bunch of their investments, which were effectively M&A. They were M&A with underlying real estate investments. So they were, you know, large portfolios of hotels or large portfolios of retail or residential assets. And you're setting up complicated joint venture structures and you're doing acquisitions of these assets. And so a lot of the skills I had as an M&A lawyer immediately translated. But that was really my first exposure to private equity and realizing that on both doing the fund work and then the acquisition work, it was really complicated. It was very interesting. I think I fundamentally understood for my clients how they were starting to think about transactions and how they kind of think as investors. And for me anyway, that really resonated. So I became a partner originally. I was a real estate partner. I was the last one that we ever made at Cravath in our real estate group. But I think even then I thought of myself as more of a private equity lawyer.
So talk about that transition to private equity and how you went about building that practice.
And that was, you know, everything about my career, when I have to tell somebody about it, seems like an odd series of happenstance and, you know, events that can't really be replicated. And that was another one. There was an unexpected early retirement in the real estate group, and then another more senior partner retired. And I was left as a very young partner. I had been a partner for about a year without really a group of my own anymore. So Cravath being Cravath, the senior partners, they kind of rallied around me and figured a new way for me to be productive and to grow a practice. And the idea that made the most sense to everyone at the time was to transition me back into being more of a traditional M&A lawyer. I had started developing fund formation clients. I have some of them still today. So I was always a bit of a hybrid. I had kept those fund formation clients and was doing fund work for private equity folks. At the same time, I was transitioning and doing more traditional M&A. And then shortly thereafter, it kind of dawned on everyone, and myself included, that I'd be a natural candidate to bridge back into our existing private equity relationships with clients that we had worked on habitually, but not extensively over the years, and really try to make a push to do private equity and pursue those types of clients in a more thoughtful, meaningful, and holistic way. So it sounds like it happened overnight. It really didn't. I think it was, in the first instance, retooling to become more of an M&A lawyer, but then staying there with my private equity base of clients on the fund side, and then eventually realizing that it made more sense for me to transition my practice to solely focus on private equity. And that also aligned with how our firm was thinking about it. I think our firm historically had viewed private equity as a subset of M&A. We didn't prioritize it. We had various private equity clients, but we didn't approach it with a real dedicated focus until the last 10 years or so. And that came from the senior leadership of our firm, from Faisal on down, really deciding as a strategic matter that it was important to us to have a viable private equity practice. It was very important to the other corporate practices to have credibility in that space. And because of the unique nature of my kind of hybrid practice, it made the most sense for me to be a big part of building that. So we started to do that. We took one of what was one of our M&A groups and reorganized it and moved some partners in, moved some partners out, and retooled it to be more focused on pursuing work with private equity clients. And then slowly over time, we've built that out. We now have 9 partners in our private equity group. It's a mix of homegrown ones like me and 3 who have joined us laterally over the last few years.
Talk a little bit about how you approach lateral hire.
I think we approach it somewhat differently. The market for lateral talent right now is amazing. I see the press reports every day, and I try to do the math on how those numbers work and how that's accretive to the firms that are acquiring that talent. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how that works. I think the way we approach it is different. We're very much still a pure partnership. I think that while things have changed in our firm and bringing in laterals is part of that change, it's still largely the same Cravath firm that I joined almost 20 years ago. And that culture of partnership is exceptionally important to us. And so when we go out and we're looking to add partners, I think the first question I always ask myself is this person culturally the right fit? I mean, there's no one example of a Cravath partner, but I do think there is this through line for all of us where we come to practice here every day. We work here every day because we believe in the place and we enjoy the work we do together with our partners. And we value the collegiality and the culture that we've built and inherited from the generations that came before us. So I think first and foremost for us, it's when you're meeting new people and considering whether they might be a good fit to the practice you're trying to build, the first thing for me is always culturally. And then beyond that, I think they need to fit in terms of how we do the work. We are not the type of firm that drives a massive associate leverage pile where really there's a handful of partners that are really focused on bringing in a lot of work and then handing it over to a massive amount of junior partners, counsel, associates to do it all. Our firm is very much a hands-on firm, even in private equity. We approach our private equity work the same way I was trained to do M&A, which is partner-led, partner-intensive, very much, you know, hands on the wheel and with lean teams. So our approach to it is not going to be the same as some of the other bigger platforms out there. And that's okay. But it means that if you're out hiring laterally, you need to find people who fit that mold too. So for us, those are kind of my two first things. One is, you know, culturally, are they the right fit? And then do they approach the work the way we approach the work too? And if those two boxes are checked, you know, then you kind of look into the rest of it. I think then you definitely look into the strategic rationale. You evaluate what the client relationships are. Do we think those clients are clients that would be interested in working with us? And normally they are, right? Like normally if the candidate we're thinking about is culturally a good fit for us and approaches the work the way we do, then we as a firm will be an excellent fit for their client. But you do think about all that stuff. And then you start thinking about, you know, does this make sense from a business perspective? Will it be accretive? How do we think about that? Is it, you know, core to what we're trying to build? Is it ancillary to what we're trying to build, but attractive? And you go through all those things. But the basics, I think, are very probably overly subjective because a lot of them are gut feel. But the basics, I think, are culture and approach to the work.
How do you expect to grow your PE practice, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
You know, from where we are right now, you know, I think of it relative to the size of our firm. Our firm throughout the 20 years I've been here has been between, you know, 90 and 105 partners, give or take. The size of the partnership has been relatively constant. And I suspect that will continue on. At the moment, we have 18 to 20, depending on how you count, M&A partners in our core M&A practice. You know, people like Mark Green, Faiza Saeed, and their teams and their groups. And as we think about it, we think about it kind of relative to the size of our core M&A practice. So if our private equity practice today is 9, as for roughly, you know, half of what our core M&A practice is, then I think we could grow private equity. I don't think it will ever get to equilibrium with our M&A practices. I just think that's unlikely, but maybe getting to a place where we're roughly 2/3 their size, if we could do it over time. And whether that takes 5 years, maybe it takes a little longer, I don't know. I think we're really focused on building what we have, both organically, and then if you can find practitioners out there, and we're constantly talking to people, but very rarely are we bringing someone in. If we can find the right people out there that we think would accelerate that growth trajectory for us, then we would do it. But I personally would rather be more patient with it and take longer to grow it organically over time than to make a lot of mistakes about bringing people in that don't ultimately fit with what we're trying to build here.
For almost every corporate lawyer, decompressing from the job and getting away from work is really important, but also really difficult. Has your experience in the military helped you at all with that challenge?
I think so. I think that at a relatively young age, I was forced to operate in pretty stressful environments. And then, you know, take the time you get when you can find it, right? So if you can find 15 minutes to sleep while you're waiting for trucks to pick you up or helicopters to take off or something, you take the 15 minutes. And I do think I kind of approach my life that way too, which is there's this idea that balance is supposed to allow you to do all the things you want to do. It's like, well, no, I think you need to carve your balance out of whatever you have. So there's certainly going to be weeks where there's no balance, right? There's no opportunity to really decompress. You're fully committed to whatever it is you're doing, sometimes multiple things all at the same time. But then when there are those slow moments, whether they're temporary in the middle of an otherwise crazy week, or you're catching your breath for a week or so in between deals, really taking advantage of those things. Now, look, I think in our day-to-day, you know, for me anyway, there's a few things. We have two young daughters. I try to spend not as much time as I would like, but certainly quality time with them every day. I drop one of them off at school this morning and then walk to work from there. So, you know, it's like it's finding those moments where I feel like I'm engaging with my family and finding things to do that I care about. And I think you can do that for a longer period of time as long as you find those opportunities and take advantage of them, even if you're having an otherwise, you know, crazy week, month, or year.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
For Drinks with the Deal, I'm David Marcus.